purity is back in fashion, and it's disturbing. We're so busy pulling up weeds by the fistful, we haven't got time to examine our hall and see if we have pulled up wheat by mistake. We are so sure of the evil one that we'd rather live with a barren field than have any harvest at the end. To say that we live in a partisan time would evoke a shrug if it were not so disturbing. There is no room for the weeds in our political posturing these days, and it makes it hard for us to live together with any spaciousness and grace. What is so amazing is how quickly weeds become wheat and wheat turns into weeds. Listen to a litany of purity and purity reversed. Once upon a time, the Republican Party was the champion of civil rights advocacy. And once upon a time, the Democratic Party bent the knee to segregationists. Now who knows? Once upon a time, the Republican Party supported universal health care. In that same once upon a time, the Democratic Party, with its organized labor support, advocated for employer-provided health insurance. Now who knows? Once upon a time, the Republican Party supported the regulation of firearms. The Democratic Party was less sure. Now who knows? Once upon a time, there were Republicans who supported the abortion rights of women. In that same once upon a time, there were Democrats opposed to abortion. Now who knows? Once upon a time, Republicans despaired of budget deficits. Democrats hailed them as engines of economic development. Now who knows? These days, would-be candidates for office are subject to litmus tests of ideological purity. On both sides and all sides of the political spectrum, and no nuance is allowed. You have to be all wheat with no hint of weeds if you want to be elected. I have seen actual voter guides circulated by evangelical churches rating candidates for office on their positions on a variety of issues. Only those who score high in purity can be considered. That is the message to their church members. This love of purity infects both sides of the political aisle. It is the sin of hubris run amok. It is the very thing Jesus counseled his disciples against. Of course, Jesus had no idea of our political culture. Jesus could not have imagined America. But his parable of the wheat and the weeds still stands as an urgent caution against all who would build a world entirely of wheat as they see the wheat. In the 4th century, a raging controversy consumed the church in North Africa as Christians were persecuted periodically by the Roman Empire until finally winning acceptance in the early 4th century. Sometimes Christian people gave in under persecution. Sometimes they offered sacrifices to the emperor. People sometimes do that under torture. What should we do when persecution flares out and we can live in safety again? What should we do about those among us who have not been able to be faithful or who lapsed? Well, one side said they must be baptized again. They have forfeited their membership among us by their failure. Therefore, they must be made holy again. As so often was the case, St. Augustine of Hippo responded with wisdom and keen insight. The church cannot be a club of saints, thundered Augustine. It is a school for sinners. There are weeds among the wheat. There will always be weeds among the wheat until God's kingdom comes in full. And that hasn't happened yet. We are all meant for holiness, said Augustine. We are meant to love God with all our hearts. We are meant to live good and whole lives. But that is something we work on all our lives. So those who lapsed need confession. They need time to repair their souls. And then we will welcome them back into the community. How different from the gatekeepers in our country. Those who would affirm the loudest for the life of unborn children often shout hooray when someone is executed, or seek to prevent adequate health care for those who need it. And pro-life sounds selective. Those who cry for freedom of speech are often quick to prevent the speech of those they don't like. Speech codes and cancel culture threaten free speech. And so it goes. Purity, not of heart, but of the rules. It may be that we see different enemies planting the weeds, but we still end up clearing the field in the sake of purity. I seldom offer solutions in my preaching. I'm not going to try today. Together, we'll have to be responsible for the health and well-being of our society. We have to cultivate healthy civic discourse. We have to learn to tell the truth. We have to learn to be patient. We have to learn to practice active waiting and figure out how such different people and views can live together peaceably and well. Wherever your vantage point is, just remember as you survey the field that the wheat and the weeds look suspiciously alike. Hence, Jesus' admonition to wait for the harvest. While we wait, I want to tell you about two women that have to be considered majestic, fulsome stalks of wheat, although in their lifetimes many call them weeds, and surely to be celebrated here in the middle of the summer before our partisan bickering begins in this election year. Isabella was the next to youngest child born to James and Elizabeth, slaves owned by a wealthy man in New York State. Born in 1797 or 98, Isabella was a slave for the first 28 years of her life. Then she escaped slavery. She fled slavery, made her way to New York City, where she joined Mother Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church. Bell became a street evangelist and focused her work on a homeless shelter for women. When she was 46 years old, Bell believed that she heard God say to her, "Go east." So she set out for Long Island. When she stopped at a Quaker farm on her way, she was asked her name. "My name is Sojourner," Bell said. She thought of all the names of all her former masters. And she then said, "The only master I have now is God, and his name is Truth." And we now remember and honor her as Sojourner Truth. She became a traveling preacher. She never learned to read or write, but she was as tall as I am. Charismatic, witty, charming, and a force to be reckoned with. Gradually, she became involved in abolition and women's rights. During a women's rights convention in Ohio, Sojourner gave the speech for which she is best remembered, "Ain't I a Woman?" I'm sure that more than once there were people wanting to pull up this weed, but thanks be to God, the wheat survived to the harvest. Harriet Ross was born sometime in 1820. The sixth of 11 children born to Ben Ross and Harriet Green. Harriet suffered beatings and a severe head injury when she was a child, but she grew up strong and defiant, refusing to appear happy and smiling to her owners. She turned to religion for solace and strength. Her favorite Bible story was about Moses leading the Israelites out of slavery. When she was 24, Harriet escaped from slavery. At that time, escaped slaves were not safe anywhere in the United States. I lived in Buffalo for 25 years, where escaped slaves came, hoping to cross the Niagara River to safety in Canada. The Michigan Avenue Baptist Church still stands in Buffalo on Michigan Avenue near downtown, a few blocks from the cathedral where I was dean, a soaring reminder of courage and faith. It is where the slaves were hidden in Buffalo before being taken to the foot of Ferry Street and ferried across the Niagara River at night to freedom and safety. Harriet made that journey, but could never forget her parents and other slaves and families she had left behind. Between 1851 and 1861, Harriet made at least 19 trips back to Maryland, freeing over 300 people by leading them to freedom. She never lost a single person, and the slaves had found their own Moses. When the Civil War came, Harriet joined the Union Army, serving as a cook and a nurse, caring for both Confederate and Union soldiers alike. She served as a spy. She was pretty good with that sort of thing. And she led 300 black troops on a raid which freed 750 slaves, making her the first American woman to lead troops into military action. In 1858, Harriet moved to upstate New York, to Auburn in upstate New York, near Rochester, where she opened her house to African-American orphans and helpless old people. Although illiterate, Harriet formed schools for African-American children. Like Sojourner Truth, Harriet joined the fight for women's rights. We remember her as Harriet Ross Tubman, and if they ever get around to it, she will adorn our $20 bills. Many people saw Harriet as a noxious weed. A sizable reward was offered for her capture. But she stood and she stands as a majestic stalk of wheat and surely is gathered into God's kingdom in God's time. I tell you these heroic stories because tomorrow, July 20th, Sojourner Truth and Harriet Ross Tubman are celebrated throughout our church as saints of God. The feast day actually joins in with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Amelia Bloomer, women's rights advocates, as liberators and prophets. In their time, they were mocked and scorned. Many hands would have pulled them out of the field if they could. But God protected them, sheltered them, and used them for vast good. And we are still feasting on the harvest they cultivated. So be patient, good people. Be patient. Wherever you think you see the enemy at work, be patient. Nurture the field. Hope for a good harvest. Remember that we are meant to be a school for sinners and not a club of saints. And remember to cultivate the field of our society so that the harvest may be abundant when it comes. Amen.